Hello, welcome to Carcast and Edmund's podcast. I was like, gosh, what? For a second, it took me a second to realize which podcast we're doing today. But we're doing the Edmund's and Carcast podcast. Welcome back,
Is the clue
Alistair.
not in who you're looking at?
it is. I am literally looking at you. It's kind of an off day for both of us.
I've got out of my sick bed to be here, so if I sound a bit off, ladies and gentlemen, that's why. Sunday evening.
Yeah. We're doing it's kind of it's a hectic week next week. So we don't really have time to get into doing the podcast on the regular schedule. So we're going to have to do it on a Sunday night. And you had to drive back into town from a little family vacation. But I appreciate it. Thanks for coming in and to being able to do this, but I want to get into a few things. You had mentioned a little while back that a new Model 3 is going to be on the way, right? Everybody's talking Cybertruck these days, but the Model 3 is such an important car for Tesla, and there's been some revisions to it. So I want to get into that, and you guys are buying one, correct? Or you bought one?
We bought one, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Model 3 was the car that really started Tesla's big takeoff. It was the car that, you know, it was their sort of Model T moment. And it was a big deal for the electric car market generally. Because if you think about when it first came out, you know, what was around, there's stuff like the, you know, the Nissan Leaf. And it was all fairly pedestrian and not very exciting. I suppose the only one that really stood out that time was the BMW i3. But the Tesla was quite a different proposition. It was bigger. It was faster. It went further. This was a proper kind of like really desirable electric car at an achievable price point. And while there was lots of fuss about, could you buy one for 35 grand? Could you not? Eventually we did. Edmunds did buy a special order one for 35 grand. So we actually ended up buying two of the original versions of the Model 3. One of the early cars, which wasn't terribly well built. And then we bought a later one where we tried to buy the $35,000 car, and we did buy one. So this is actually the third Model 3 that we have purchased in our time. And this one was like internal code named Highland, but it's a heavy in sort of traditional Tesla speak, in traditional kind of car world speak. This is a heavy facelift of the existing car. So, I mean, you can see that just in the way it looks. Most of the bodywork is the same. Most of the interior is the same, but what they've done is to give it a very heavy update in the areas that tend to matter. So it's got the styling, you've got the slightly different lights at the front, technology's moved on. At the rear, again, different tail lights. You've now got Tesla written along the rear of the car instead of just having the T badge. It looks a bit fresher, it looks a bit more contemporary, and also given how many Model 3s there are on the road, it was just important to offer something a little bit different. Inside, more of a shift. Everything's still focused on that central screen, that giant iPad, which is now the kind of Tesla signature. But the quality has, I mean, this is like early Teslas. The quality was pretty terrible. The quality of this one straight out of the gate is way better.
Okay. I swear I just saw one on the road. Now that you mentioned that they got rid of the Tesla badge and they put the lettering on the back, I just saw it on the road, a new one that said Tesla on the back with, with just, you know, the paper plates on it. So somebody must have just bought it along with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, where I live in Southern California, just south of LA, there are so many on the roads already. So whether people have been waiting up on the end of their leases or whatever to get the new one. But I'm starting to see a lot around this area. Inside, it's just a nicer place to be. Similar size, the seats are a bit better. The quality, the sort of touchy-feely stuff is better. The finish is improved. Really good hi-fi. Tesla doesn't do like named hi-fi brands like the rest of the industry, but whoever they're using, really good job. And just generally feels like, you know, a notch better overall. It's more refined. The ride quality, which was a issue traditionally with the Model 3, is improved. We bought the dual motor version. What don't we like? Well, they've done that Tesla thing of getting rid of column stalks. So now the only way to indicate is to push a button on the steering wheel.
Right.
So like for the first couple of days driving out, my like left hand was kind of like waving in air every time I came to a stoplight. Or my right hand, either, both.
Yeah.
And then So, I mean, I don't know whether you get muscle memory after a while, but it still feels a bit clunky to start using your thumb every time you want to indicate. And they've also moved they got rid of the gear stick altogether. They've moved it to the center screen. So now if you want to go forwards, you have to kind of slide your finger up. Or in theory, the car calculates for itself. And apparently it's right about 80% of the time. So in theory, you're sat there, you're pulling away. And if it doesn't know, it asks you to choose a gear. But if it does know, it sort of automatically selects drive and away you go, which I get it on some level. They're probably saving some money by not having column stalks. They think it's cool and minimalist.
Right.
I think it's actually a bridge too far. It's quite nice to have a physical gear lever. It's quite nice to have proper column stalks. But overall, it's a good improvement. And it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's cheap, but in the world of cars today, particularly in the world of EVs, it's pretty good value.
Now, were you expecting much difference in the technology and anything different in the battery platform? Is it faster charging? Is it longer range? Like, what else have they done to the Model 3 other than just sort of the facelift we were kind of expecting?
So there's not a massive overhaul on the charging technology. So there is on the Cybertruck, less so on the Model 3. The range we did in Edmunds EV range test on our dual motor version did 338 miles. And you're now going to ask me what the previous one did, and I can't even remember. But we're not seeing sort of significant changes here. This is more about, it's not significantly faster, it doesn't go significantly further, but this is more about, it's a sort of story of incremental gain, shall we say. It's not a massive overhaul. So 2024, our range test, 338 miles versus their estimate at 341. So that's actually pretty good, because normally we don't beat Tesla's estimates. So it's an improvement, but it's not, you know, things are moving in the right direction, but it's not, you know, this isn't a quantum leap by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. And the car was
all about sweating the details. Yeah.
Yeah. The car was already quick to begin with, and it already handled pretty well. But you're right, it was more of a comfort thing that I found, especially in LA, where there's a bunch of Model 3s used as Ubers. Then, and kind of just sitting in the back, I always felt like they were a little harsh.
It's funny, isn't it? It's like German. It's like when you go to Germany and you sit in a Mercedes E-Class, which is painted kind of beige, and it's a taxi. And you always think, why would I want to buy like an E-Class luxury car when basically it's just in my head, it's a German taxi.
Yeah.
And it's true. I know we live in LA, so we get a skewed view of the world. But pretty much every Uber I ever get picked up in LA now is a Model 3.
Yeah.
And somehow it does diminish it, doesn't it? This is nothing against Uber drivers, but there is something about owning and driving a car, which is basically a taxi, which for a lot of people doesn't feel, particularly if you're pitching a luxury experience.
Yeah. So that's, I guess we should talk about that for a minute, because Tesla came out of the gate with, other than the Roadster, the Musk era of Tesla, basically said, we want to come out with an affordable car and an affordable truck. And then they sort of came out with this luxury brand, which just because of the price, it sort of went into that category. I think if you said luxury, you'd be like, hey, I'm going to get a Model S, and then you get into a, you know, an Audi S class, and you're like, it's not the same, you know, get into like a S8 or something like that. You know, it's not quite the same. So was it a luxury brand, or was it just sort of priced in that luxury market? And then they kind of missed the mark with pricing it affordably. And it took a while, like you guys said, to get to that $35,000 mark. And I mean, I guess eventually it got there, but it was not really what they were pushing. And then the truck we'll get into in a minute as well. But I'm not sure how you're categorizing it now.
Yeah, I think this is that. So I was actually just, while you were talking, Matt, I was just checking my notes, because I knew I'd written this down. So in the old Model 3, we achieved the same equivalent trim, dual motor. We achieved 331 miles on our range test. New one, 338. So basically the same.
Right.
0 to 60, 4.2 seconds. So it's still mighty quick. But this is the dual motor version. And then if you look at the pricing, you're right. I mean, this is the sort of big deal that Tesla has, for two reasons. One, because it keeps cutting its pricing, which is a great thing if you're the new car buyer. It's a great thing for adoption of EVs generally. Really bad news if you're an existing Tesla owner and worried about residual values, because there's a lot of people who paid a lot more money for their Teslas who are now underwater when it comes to residuals, or their car's now worth a lot less than they thought it was. And that's the problem with having this kind of dynamic pricing. If you keep slashing the price to drive market share, then what about your existing owners?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that they are just so ubiquitous that the Model Y last year was the biggest selling car in the world, biggest selling car here in California. And when they are so ubiquitous, it's hard to retain that luxury edge, isn't it? I mean, it's a reason why Rolex brought out Tudor as a sister brand, is because there was too many, you know, getting to be too many Rolexes that need something else to sell. And so if you look at it, when Tesla started, they were the brand. And I was at the original launch of the Model S. God, what was that, 15 years ago or something? I was at Fremont. I was flown in from the UK by Tesla to witness this brave new dawn. And a few investors turned up. I think Google execs turned up and drove away the first Model S. We got driven around in it. And there was no question back then that Tesla was the sort of the tech fantasy. And it was undeniably a luxury brand. And then Model X, with its crazy Falcon doors that are still a bit of a challenge, that reaffirmed it. Then the Model 3 came along, which was always part of Elon's big vision. In fact, I go even further back, because I remember driving the Tesla Roadster, which was based on the Lotus, which was the first Tesla. And I remember driving that in Spain a long, long time ago. So I've driven everything. And all the way through to today, Tesla's been this kind of tech fantasy, hasn't it? That all the Silicon Valley types were buying Teslas and running around in them. And now they've become the default EV choice across the world. And now they're selling really on, people like them, but they're selling predominantly on price. I mean, I've got the Tesla website open in front of me, you know, base Model 3, $38,990. But when you get into it, it's actually the lease prices that are, you know, particularly appealing. You know, you're well under, if you get the lease, $329 with $3,000 down. You know, that's on the entry level car. They just slashed the price of full self driving, whatever you. I always say that with a pinch of salt. They've just cut that in half if you want to subscribe to it on a monthly basis. So they're always playing this game with pricing up, down, down, up. But you know, these things now are good value. I mean, it's hard to think of a better electric car arguably a better family car if you can live with the electric infrastructure at, you know, $350. It's a lot of car for that money.
Yeah, and now we're starting to see Tesla sort of become, for lack of a better term, a more conventional car company. We're starting to see, like you were saying, discounts on the cars. They're cutting prices on the cars. We're starting to see a little bit of advertising coming from them. We're starting to see some hesitation from Wall Street going, hey, Tesla's struggling a little bit with sales in China. And statements from Elon Musk saying, you know, the biggest competitor they have is BYD, which is not a brand we normally know out here. It's a Chinese brand. But their struggle in China could be as a result of that. Could be BYD doing so much more than what they are in China. And at some point, Wall Street needs to look at that and go, well, have we been rewarding this company with a high stock price for too long, when now that things are starting to settle and they're, you know, like you said, they got almost 20 years or something like that, 20 years under their belt going, All right, now let's look at the long term of this. Where's Tesla going? Where is it going to be? Where are these cars going to be priced? You know, what's going to be the resale value of these cars? How it's going to, this is turning into, you know, very much a real, you know, legacy car company. Certainly in the world of EV cars, they are the legacy car company.
That's right. They're no longer the cheeky startup from from Silicon Valley. They are now the they're to be shot at. And if you look at the Chinese market, I think something like 80% of the sales are Chinese. BYD vies with Tesla now for what is the biggest EV manufacturer in the world, despite not selling here in the US because of import tariffs. So there are more Chinese manufacturers coming into the game with really what looked like really effective products. It was kind of interesting. I was back in Europe recently, and you walk into the UK, and everywhere you look, there's an MG. Now, MG is a famous British brand that was sold over here, but actually, MG now is Chinese owned, and are doing very affordable EVs in the UK, and so it's a rapidly changing market, and where is Tesla going to be in a few years as all this shakes out, and perhaps as the US market changes as well. And they are building arguably more cars than they're selling at the moment. They are vulnerable to the slowdown in the electric vehicle market, which is it's slowed down in terms of the rate of adoption, in terms of the rate of growth. Got to be careful how we address this, but there is no question that the EV market is not progressing at the rate that either people hoped or even people expected at the moment. Tesla's vulnerable to that because it only makes EVs and only will. If you look at their lineup, Model 3 and Model Y are still really competitive. Model Y will no doubt have a similar facelift next year. But the rest of the range, like the Model S, is like arguably one of the oldest cars on sale. Now the 4Runner's going, the Model S, the old 4Runner's about to be replaced. Model S must be one of the oldest cars on sale. Model X likewise. And they're just not selling many. And they're if you want to sell in high margin, then you need the expensive cars. So they're a brand about Model 3 and Model Y, so a mass market brand. And while they still have some critical advantages, charging infrastructure, well, they're opening that up to every other brand. Now that's an expedient act,
And that
and
could be a
they'll
good
make
source of income for them.
could be a good source of income, but at the same time, some of the tax credits that they've been selling as well, that's that's to other manufacturers. That how where, where's the future of that look like? There's a whole bunch of stuff in the background that I'm sure that a lot of analysts on Wall Street who are a lot closer to some of this and understand some of the economics of it better than I do will be across. And that's why we've seen a decline in Tesla's share price. There's a few other things as well. Like we understand that the Model 2 or the Model 3, whatever it was going to be called, the $25,000 Tesla that was supposed to be heading for production now looks like it's not. There's a lot of talk about a robo-taxi, but what does that really look like? That sounds like another thing that will be announced and be a long way off. Cybertruck was supposed to be, Cybertruck was supposed to be this kind of Model 3 of the truck world. The reality is it's not. They can't build them fast enough. It's too expensive. It's too eccentric. If they'd built like a truck, like was a bit like a Model Y, you can't help but think they would have sold a ton of them. So
I
it's
mean, when
like,
Cybertruck was announced years ago, I on paper it made sense. They're going, hey, look at a company like Ford and GM and Stellantis, and going, they sell so many trucks, we need to get into that business. And can we do it with a cool EV truck? But and it needs to start at around 40, maybe $50,000. And now, I don't know, Cybertrucks are $100,000, and now it's just kind of a toy for the wealthy and not really the work truck they thought it was going to be. Now, what Wall Street was told it was going to be, right? The stock price behind going, hey, Cybertruck's coming out. That's going to be the new work truck. Everyone's going to have one of those. Every pool man is going to have one of
Exactly. Every
those.
Texan builder.
Yeah, right.
It
Is
it's not.
and it's not. It's not, you can't really do it with a $100,000 or $110,000
With a
truck.
stainless steel, you got the one sat behind you. But it's that was the that was the weird thing about being at that launch. It was like, you're on a massive roll. Why don't you just do like something a bit like the Rivian, but maybe a bit cheaper than an R1T? You know, like a Tesla truck, because Tesla now is actually a relatively conventional company. So that's maybe why it's called Cybertruck. And, you know, they really detune the Tesla on it. But it's,
yeah,
it's an interesting place because this is the first time I think people are looking at it as a car company. For so long, they've got away with saying we're a tech company. We've got this kind of like crazy, you know, crazy billionaire that runs us who seems utterly inspired in everything that he touches from PayPal onwards. So everything's going to work out for the good. And you know, we're never going to advertise. We're never going to do this. We're never going to do that. And now you're suddenly seeing a different world. And they're continuing to chase market share. You've got everybody else piling into the market. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how it shakes out. Tesla's share price is down. Rivian and Lucid are, you know, at an all-time low at the moment. It's a really, really hard market for any sort of startup at the moment.
For sure. And with Fisker being in the news so much with their struggles, it does put sort of a gray cloud over the EV market, especially the startup brands. But that's not to say that they can't and won't recover. They absolutely can. And like you said, Tesla, you know, just was the best-selling vehicle in the world.
Yeah, and the thing about the Tesla right now is driving home in our Model 3 that we bought, and I think if you're listening regularly, we own a Genesis GV60 in the family, which I love. It's a really good vehicle. But we're also paying over $500 a month for it. And if the Tesla's under, the Model 3 is under 400, we had a Model 3 before we had the GV60, I was driving home thinking, this is a nice vehicle. You know, this is just a good product. And I think that's where everybody else suffers now, because you get into a Model 3 or Model Y, and it just, even if you don't care about all the Tesla nonsense and all the, you know, fanboys on Twitter, it's just a good product that works. The infrastructure's good. You know, that it's easy to buy. You know what you're paying.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, and if you can lease one at a cheap rate, it's easier to see why it's selling. It's just, you know, and then easy to see why everybody else is struggling to sell them at like $100,000. If you're Rivian or Lucid or somebody, I mean, look at the Lucid lease rates at the moment are, again, like 18 month leases for $650 and things like that. You know, these are,
and it's moved the needle for them. Like,
great for the consumer.
Yeah.
And,
but they're moving inventory.
There's not a lot of margin in that.
No, but they're moving the cars. They're getting them out there.
Yeah, same with Rivian. You know, if you look at some really competitive, particularly on the truck, there's some really competitive leases. We're moving away from like the pandemic market into something that's a lot more accessible. But we need it because people just aren't willing to buy. You know, when a Model 3 is so good at $40,000, you know, I think lots of people are questioning why spend $80,000, $100,000 or something. It's going to be fascinating. Like Macan EV comes into the market this year in the model that you want, in the trim that you want. That's going to be another $100,000 electric car. Let's see how that does.
Well, speaking of, if you wanted an EV and you were looking to spend $231,995, that's including destination. Maybe, just maybe, you look at the Taycan Turbo GT, which you had a chance to drive.
Yes, from advocating a great consumer choice to, well, we called it in the headline, which I'm quite proud of, we called it the Ludicrous Taycan to play on the Tesla Ludicrous mode. Again, this is kind of interesting because Porsche used to say, and Mercedes said the same thing, we don't do silly horsepower cars. With an EV, it's quite easy to do, but frankly, the only reason to do it is for a startup to make a bunch of noise, get the media excited, and to sell a few to people who just want like the most power. And then give it a couple of years. Here we are with a 1,092 horsepower Taycan Turbo GT. And this is the poster child of the poster person of the new Taycan lineup. So it's done as a bit of a halo product. So basically, if you had a standard Turbo S, which in itself, I think it's in front of you, Matt. Well, what's that gone up to, like 938 horsepower.
Yeah.
So if you're in a Turbo S, A, you're going to be a bit pissed that they brought this out. But anyway, you might be the new Turbo S, 938 horsepower, but you haven't got the flagship. The flagship is, well, it's it's 1,092 in overboost. I had to ring them up and say, how do you describe this like mode? If you go into attack mode, it gives you a 1,092 horsepower for like 10 seconds. Like, what do you call like, what do you say it is? It's like, oh, it's overboost. I was like, well, it's not overboost because it's got no boost.
Right.
Think about it. But apparently, in the same way that it's a turbo without a turbo, this mode that gives you an extra whack of horsepower.
It's the battery drain button.
When you
hit that, I'm sure the battery just gets sucked down immediately as quickly as possible because you're trying to make that much power.
It is. It's funny. The whole car's kind of amusing. So there's two that go side by side. There is the standard, I say, Turbo GT, which has this really cute little gurney flap. It's got like a little bit of, you know, it's got like a front splitter and some side blades, but the main thing is it's really cute little gurney flap. I think it looks great myself. Different wheels and stuff, obviously. Or then you can get the Vizac edition, named after the test track, which has the same power and costs the same, but they rip out the rear seats and put in like a little carbon fiber luggage hold all. And then you've got a really big rear wing and it saves a bit of weight. They reckon ripping out the rear seat saves about 20 pounds. And bearing this thing is an EV, it weighs about 5,000 pounds. We haven't had it on the scales yet, but reckon on about 5,000 pounds. So ripping out the rear seat saves about 20. And they reckon that overall they're claiming if you get the Vizac edition, you save 157 pounds relative to Turbo S. So you get more power and less weight, which is the classic recipe. But bear in mind, it's something that's that heavy. It's more about the symbolism than it is about, you know, 157 pounds is what that's like. And maybe that's getting rid of you, Matt. Maybe that's me driving alone versus having you on board.
That's basically what it is.
Is that being generous or is that being insulting? I don't know.
No, that's actually about right on. That's about right on. When I saw that package as an option, I was kind of wondering, it's like, but it's a four-door. It's not like it's a two-door with the little rear seat or something, and you're getting the seat delete, which you were never going to use anyway. Now you're getting a big, heavy four-door EV, and then you're getting a rear seat delete, and you have useless rear doors because it's just a luggage.
Yeah, it's an easy way of putting your luggage. But also, it's like, as I say in the video, I did a video on it, the whole thing's encased in carbon fiber, which scratches. Yeah. It's like a polished carbon fiber. It scratches super easy.
Yeah.
So
all you can put is like pillows and stuff back there.
Yeah. A soft bag with rubber feet. I don't know. Maybe they'll make you a bespoke. They must make you, Porsche designer, somebody must make you a kind of bag that won't scratch the carbon. Or if not, it must be on its way.
And I'd love to say that it was available with the car, but I'm sure it's an extra $7,000 because it's Porsche. You can get the scratch resistant soft felt bag that they developed with NASA and came up with a new material that's going to work and whatever it's, you know, that you would expect from them. But that being said, it's a cool looking car. And I know they wanted it to be set a benchmark for that type of vehicle because it's Porsche.
And we drove it. We went all the way to Seville to drive it. We were literally in Seville for 36 hours, barely. And on the Circuito Monte Blanco, which is a cool little racetrack just outside of Seville. And we only drove the car on the track because I think they're just taking the view that it's so fast that you can only really experience it on the track. But even the engineers, they had like the project leaders there who are mega drivers, by the way. And they were, even they were saying, look, we don't think owners are going to take this to the track, or very few. We just don't see it being that kind of car, not least because you're going to run out of range pretty quick and not many circuits have got fast charging. Porsche like brought their own infrastructure. So they turned up with this thing on the track and said, look, we think most customers are going to drive it on the road. So it's probably going to sit in the garage as like a fun toy. And it's not a GT3. So I was going in thinking, okay, Vizac edition, this is going to be an electric 911 GT3 RS, sort of, given the power. The reality is more like a Cayenne GT, which is still really good and really focused, but it's not as track centric. Right. And that's combined. There's a bunch of things going to that. Like the brakes are, you don't get that like wonderfully firm pedal feel you get in something like a GT3. And then the ABS threshold is way earlier. So on a track, you hit the brakes, it's quite a soft pedal, and then the ABS is on you. And you just can't get past the fact that it is so heavy.
Right.
It's a better EV on the track than anything else I've driven. You can trail brake it, you can, it'll adjust its angle on the throttle, you can do all sorts of things with it. And it's, of course, insanely fast. I mean, they say 2.1 to 60, and they're normally pessimistic, and it feels bonkers fast. And it's really good for a £5,000 car. I mean, really good. But it's not a GT3. It's just not.
Yeah,
it's not
really fair to compare it to a GT3 just because it's a Porsche nameplate. They're saying this is the best, most out of control, bonkers, over the top EV you can get.
Yes, and it is a bonkers, great, over the top EV. But it's not, yeah. But in your head, you've got to think of it as,
yeah,
a really, really fast, really capable EV, not a 911 in a four door body.
Right.
It's just not.
So you back out $100,000, you back out the 1,000 something horsepower,
yeah,
and you're left with the Taycan, which I think the point is going to be a pretty good all around upgrade to the current Taycan. Like, it's a good four door, you know, EV that's, you know, doesn't have to be $250,000. It could be, you know,
So I think it's what we talked about last week, Matt. The play here is to buy a Taycan 4S, which is a fabulous car, for like $120,000, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That gives you what, $110,000 left? So you can nearly get yourself into a 911 T, which is an awesome car.
Right.
Or you can certainly get yourself into something, you know, like a 99. You get yourself into like a 997. You get a 997 GT3 for 110, not far off. Yeah, you could get yourself into a really nice like 997 GTS or something like that, or a 991 Carrera S, something like that. So you could get yourself into some,
yeah,
in a really nice 911. So that's your garage. But the people buying this aren't making those kind of choices. That's the play.
If you're a Porsche fanatic and you're looking to spend $250,000, go for the two cars. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to be disappointed with the Taycan 4.
No.
You know, like, it's just, you're going to be, it's going to be great. And you're going to get better range. It's going to be more comfortable. And then you're going to have some great sports car in the garage.
I did have quite a big moment in there, because we were talking about the guy we'd had to like pair off, so we're in two cars actually. And the guy was with us. Oh, yeah, like, you go through this little together, then it's flat through. There's like a left right click. He said we're here like 2 weeks ago for the Panamera. It's flat through that section. Maybe I was talking to Cameron, not concentrating, but like, yeah, it might be flat in a Panamera, not flat when you got 1,100 horsepower.
Yeah,
and I had that little moment. You know, you got in, it's just starting to push, and you're like, oh, this is suboptimal. And then I had like a little lift, and it started coming around. And I was like, woo. So it had, thankfully, it was one of those circuits where there's like, you know, there's no gravel trap. You just run off into a bit of tarmac and back on. But it was like, yeah, bit of a mental process there. Flat if you've got, you know, a Panamera. Flat it ain't if you've got, you know, over 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah. Well, if you guys want to see that, there's Alistair did a video on the Taycan GT. So,
which not a lot of people have watched. Well, I mean, I don't know, what are we up to, 50,000 or something? But it's interesting. Like, we always look at YouTube. I might be being self-deprecating here, but we always kind of look at YouTube as a barometer of what really, you know, what people are really fired up by. I'm just looking after we speak what the current count is. Yeah, it's like 50,000 views, which, you know, for compared to what the channel normally does, is like not great. So it's always interesting that your YouTube views gives you a real barometer of like what people are interested in.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. After people listen to this podcast,
no, it's going
to
be like millions.
It's going to be
millions.
It's going to be off the hook.
Say something nice in the comments as well.
Before we wrap up, I just want to touch on 4Runner real quick. So
yeah.
4Runner, we have finally, after what, 15 years, we've got a new 4Runner. And I want to get excited about it. And it's got a cool look. And the Trail Hunter looks kind of cool. My concern is it's largely based off the Tacoma, which you guys don't particularly love in your reviews recently. It's just it's cool, but it's just not quite there. And then we'll get into it next week. Your Edmonds team put the Tacoma up against the Colorado and the new Ford Ranger, and we'll see how those kind of rank, and you'll have a video up on that as well. But just kind of thoughts on the 4Runner.
Yeah, it's interesting. I spent some time last summer with the development team of the Tacoma when it was originally unveiled. That was like when we got a first look at it. That was a few months before we actually drove it. And what they're basically saying is the Tacoma's been done in the US, and the 4Runner, because it's seen as a global car, even if it's predominantly a US vehicle, was being developed in Japan. So they're actually being run by different teams. But there's obviously a lot of shared componentry between the two. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shares out. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, the Tacoma is not terrible or anything. It's just that in certain areas, it feels
Right.
like,
It had a lot to live up to.
yeah, it's sometimes you see this, particularly with the Japanese brands. We saw this a few years ago with Honda and the Civic, where they benchmark what's available in the market at the moment and beat that. And this seems to be a trend that we've seen. But then if somebody comes along and moves the needle more than you anticipate, you get caught out. And I wonder whether with Toyota and the Tacoma, a little bit of that is happening here. So they've looked at the market and said, right, Colorado's here, Ranger, it's not that great. And so, you know, Nissan, where do we need to be? We need to be here. Okay. But then actually, Chevy came along with the Colorado, and the new Colorado is fantastic. And we've just bought a Ranger, and we just driven the Ranger. And that also looks like a really strong vehicle. So suddenly Toyota's come out with a new vehicle and gone, oh, everybody else has actually moved the needle further than we anticipated. So 4Runners, it doesn't mean the 4Runner's going to be a bad car. There's a lot of detail in that can change. And a lot of stuff that it shares, like the interior and stuff, is absolutely fine. It's just going to be interesting. And also Toyota's now got this strategy, which you got the 4Runner starting at 40 something grand.
Yeah.
Then you've got the Land Cruiser, where there will be clear overlap between upper trim 4Runners and lower trim Land Cruisers. And then above that, you've got the Sequoia. Now, you can say that's a good strategy because you've basically got three vehicles peppering the market. But, you know, before 4Runner didn't have Land Cruiser. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out as well. We actually did a piece on the, if you go to edmunds.com/news, there's a piece where we look at how they all shake out, how much more expensive a Land Cruiser is and what you get for the money. And then, you know, where Sequoia sits as well. I mean, Sequoia is much bigger and it's Tundra based and it's a three row, but it's interesting how they're treating that market. And that's before you get into all the Lexus versions of stuff.
Yeah, and there's the change of the engines is kind of a significant thing, right? No more V6 engines. We talked about it in the Tacoma as well. Now they're going to the four cylinder and then the hybrid. So they're combining it with an electric motor to try to fill in the gap.
Yeah, I think the hybrid will be particularly interesting. I mean, what the four port's got 270, you know, the base 278 horsepower, which is still plentiful. Hybridized version with, you know, 326 horsepower, 465 pound-feet of torque, which, you know, is a lot. It'll be really interesting. I mean, look, these cars sell. Tacoma and 4Runner have always sold because they've always been, you know, seen as a bulletproof option. My neighbor's got one. He's had one, had it for, you know, they absolutely adore it. And it's just that's why it sells. So it'd be really interesting. And of course, now you've got in the market, you know, you've just got the Jeep, you've got the Bronco, Defender's a little bit more expensive, you know, so it's not, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how all this shakes out,
Yeah, and
particularly where
like
the
you were
Land
saying that.
Cruiser sits relative to 4Runner in the dealerships. You know, how are people seeing the Land Cruiser relative to the 4Runner? Because let's face it, people buy 4Runners and spend a ton of money on them.
Yeah. And I think as this starts to show up, we're going to start to see a lot of aftermarket attention to this, to the 4Runner.
Yeah. And do you have a 4Runner with tons of aftermarket? Once you've done that, you're well into Land Cruiser territory. So, but then I guess the aftermarket will also go after Land Cruiser because it's a Land Cruiser.
Yeah, because it's a Land Cruiser. Anyway, it seems interesting. They gave it a kind of a tougher look to it. The Trail Hunter trim looks kind of interesting as well. And the photos they put out, the green with the gold or the bronze, I guess, is kind of a it's kind of a cool look.
Yeah, and they like the. I mean, the biggest like, what did they really need to get overcome? Well, the old problems with the last Forerunner was, you know, the interior felt really tired. The safety standards weren't, you know, as good as they should be in you know, in today's world. Space wise, it wasn't that great. Transmission and engine were lagging really behind. So when you put all that together, if you've kept the Forerunner recipe and sorted all that, and the interior basically pinched the Tacoma will be a load better. So, you know, there's a lot of promise here. It'll be really interesting to see how it shakes out with Jeep, which, let's face it, is getting on a bit now, and Bronco, which is also, you know, not an absolute spring chicken. So slightly different to the truck market, where suddenly, you know, Chevy and Ford have come into the market with really impressive vehicles. In that kind of like off-roady SUV segment, there's not necessarily quite as much talent.
Well, Forerunner, you guys can take a look at that as well. You can go to edmunds.com/news and see all of the stuff that we've been talking about here, as well as that Forerunner. And priced about $42,000, works its way up to probably mid-50s, and we'll see if there's going to have anything beyond that. But that's kind of the range we're at. So next week, maybe we'll get into sort of the comparison of Colorado versus Ranger versus Tacoma, because it's kind of a something we've kind of been looking forward to, or I have for sure.
And we can see how much commentary we get on X about all the chat about Tesla having a bit of a rougher period. Maybe
guys,
we'll pick
so
out
much.
Maybe next week, Matt, we'll pick out off X some of the more choice responses to the fact that we said, you know, Tesla's facing some, you know, some choppy waters.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think it's just sort of a settling of.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, Tesla's not going anywhere. Like, the share price isn't, you know, isn't going to like implode overnight. It's just a bit more of a kind of reality check than, you know, perhaps some of the fantasy stuff that everybody was eulogizing about a couple of years ago. We didn't even talk about full self-driving, so. Yeah, we will see.
Yeah, we're going to have to save that for another time.
Well, we are actually getting that. Our Model 3, because when you got the Model 3, we bought it with us, although actually we were able to take it off our Model Y onto the Model 3. They gave us like a credit for it. But so we have got it. But when you got the car, it wasn't ready. So you have to wait for the software update, which I think we've just got.
Yeah.
Which, again, is classic Tesla.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you next week. Until next time. Keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.